Welcome back, one and all, to the best seat at the track. You already know it is the Front Stretch Podcast. I am your host, Davey Siegel. We got Brian Nolan, fresh back from Fontana, to help us recap the Wise Power 400 at Auto Club Speedway. And the driver who led some laps and looked pretty, pretty good out in that race, Eric Jones, is on with us as our guest. Plus, we have a Las Vegas Motor Speedway preview. So let's get it all started.
Buggity, buggity, buggity! Let's go racing, boys!
Green flag is out on the podcast this week. As I mentioned, we had boots on the ground once again for the third race in a row. Front Stretch is out and about. And for the second time in three races, Brian Nolan was on the ground in the great state of California. How'd your time out in Fontana treat you, son?
Fastest trip of my life for a NASCAR race. Flew in Saturday morning, early Saturday, flew out Sunday late. Not that late, but it was we were pushing it to the airport. But man, it was great to be back at Fontana. I didn't realize how much I missed that track. I mean, it's got so much character, as we saw on Sunday. Great, great atmosphere. I loved it. It was a really good time. The only thing I was missing was you, buddy, because last time I was in California, I was with you.
Oh, yeah. We missed our boy Sturby, who he has gone on to bigger and better things. Yeah, we had a good trio going there. So you flew in Saturday. You got to the track, like, during a practice session or qualifying, right?
Yeah, so I woke up at 4 in the morning, Idaho time. I got to Ontario, California, which is about 7 miles away from the track, at 10:30, and I got to the credential office at, like, 10:50, like, 10 minutes before practice started.
And did you leave on Sunday before the race was over?
No. Literally, once the checkered flag waved,
I left.
Yes. Like, Larson was doing the burnouts, and I was
and like, see ya, packing up.
Literally. And, like, I made my flight with, like, 5 minutes to spare.
Wow. Because I saw you tweet. You're like, wow, Larson wins. And then the next tweet you had was sitting on the plane. I was like, damn, he booked it there.
I was talking to our content director, Mike, because I thought he was going to get really mad at me. He's like, well, our boss usually does that too, so I won't get that mad at you for that.
Yeah. Dude, we were at Daytona 1 year. Were you there that year when Tom left, like, in the middle of the race on Sunday night because he had a flight to catch?
Well, the 2021, where it was, they were about to
delayed.
Go green. Yeah, yeah. And then the rain came again. He's like, well, I won't be able to stay even if it goes.
Yeah, that might be what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, that was the one. Yeah.
Well, regardless, it looked like a great time out there. I've never been to Auto Club Speedway. I'd love to get out there. Let's talk about the racing because it was phenomenal. We got to start off with the man who finished P1. It's no surprise. Kyle Larson wins for the fifth time in the last 7 races dating back to last season, I believe. Is that right? Can that be right? I don't know. Anyways, he's really good. it's no shocker that he won at Auto Club. 2-mile track, worn-out surface. Hendrick Motorsports, still the top of the top. But the way that this race unfolded, Brian, I think is why it was such a compelling one, because you had a lot of people up at the front that are not usually there, comers and goers, tire fall-offs, spins. The next-gen car had a pretty good debut on a non-super speedway or temporary stadium track, I would say.
And, you know, Davey, I think this is going to be the norm for most of the races. We're going to see people that are not usually up at the front. Eric Jones was in contention for the win, not just a top 5 or a top 10. He was in contention for the win for the entire race. Daniel Hemric was 6 laps down. The guy
finished top 10.
He finished 9th. I apologize. He finished in the top 10. Kyle Busch was 4 laps down. He got a 14, but he was on the lead lap. I mean, that was incredible. You had guys like Ricky Stenhouse Jr. In top 5, top 10, all
Eric Almirola overcame that half spin, the second one they had on the weekend, and finished 6th out of nowhere. Harvick, who was a non-factor all day, 7th.
I was watching a couple guys during stage 1. I was watching the 45, the 23, and the 4, and they were downright terrible. I don't know what Rodney Childress did between stages 2 and 3, but he did something because that car was absolutely 360'd between those two stages, because for him to get a top 10 after literally running 25th to 30th through the first two stages is very, very solid for that team. But, like, look at this top 5. RCR, Petty GMS, Trackhouse, and then Penske with Hendrix winning. I mean, the parity is indescribable.
I love it. Out of all the people that were up there, RCR obviously killed. I mean, Austin Dillon finished 2nd out of nowhere, but Reddick was dominating the day, had the best car, should have won. if it wasn't for that tire issue. Between Reddick, Eric Jones running up there, Chase Briscoe, I think, led the most laps in a single race he has in his career. Stenhouse was up there. Who surprised you the most? Who were you most surprised that was running up front on pure raw speed? Not strategy, not luck. They went up there and they took it.
Got to be Eric Jones. I mean, I was, to be honest, I was expecting Tyler Reddick to be up there, but Eric Jones not just settled for a third place. Dave, he led six times. He wasn't
I thought he was going to win.
Exactly. And talking with, we are in our Slack, and Michael was like, this is Jones's race to lose. And this guy was battling for the lead with Reddick. It felt like a three car race between the 24, the 8, and the 43. Mm-hmm. And the 24 and the 8 had, they got into an incident after 8 cut his down. But with that being said, Eric Jones looked like it just didn't have the car to battle with the 5, but beyond impressed with the 43. I mean, looking at his teammate Ty Dillon, 17th, wasn't in contention all day. Something was different with that 43 car. Very, very impressed with how Eric Jones ran.
Yeah, I was as well. If I had to pick one, I would also go with Eric Jones, and not because he's our guest in our next segment on the podcast, but I was genuinely impressed with how much speed he and that team had. And you guys will hear it in our interview, but I asked him that question, you know, like, what do you attribute this sudden burst of speed to? Is it the next-gen car? Is it the racetrack fitting your driving style? Is it a combination of all these things, the merger? I won't give his answer away, but let's just say that it's probably along the lines of a combination of all those things. So it was really cool to see the 43 back up there. Reddick is going to win a race this year. It might even be this weekend in Vegas. He's going to win multiple races, Brian.
He will win, and the 99 Suarez will win. I'm guaranteeing that, because both of them have too fast of race cars, and they're too talented of drivers to not win.
And Ross Chastain, who had that crazy, scary crash in practice right as it started. I mean, he started in the rear in a backup car, sliced and diced his way through the field, and if it wasn't for a spin on the front stretch while he was running top 10, he probably would have been in line for a top 10 finish as well. And that kind of leads me to another overarching theme from this race, Brian, which is unfortunately not on the positive side. It was those flat tires. And we saw with this next-gen car at Daytona, when you get a flat tire and you're stuck, you're stuck. And you're not going to be able to get the car moving. And if you do, you're going to have to be super ginger with it, because that rear diffuser can get damaged. That's an easy $15,000 to $30,000 that you got to replace. Even when the trucks are bringing them back to pit road, it's damaging them. So, you know, you take a guy like Christopher Bell, who spun out harmless, no real damage, sat there for 2-3 laps and lost 2-3-4 laps. And even though he didn't necessarily have a race-winning car, his chances of a good finish were gone just because of a spin. And I'm curious what you think, because Brian Patty, Ricky Stenhouse Jr.'s crew chief, actually was on Sirius this morning, and he said, look, if you spin out and you get a flat tire and your pressures are low, there deserves to be consequences for that. And if those consequences are you go 2-3 laps down for a spin, so be it. That's part of the game. I think a lot of people fall on the other side of the spectrum and they say, look, we can't be getting penalized with a 2-3 lap penalty for just spinning out harmlessly and having a flat tire. There needs to be a solution here. There's no inner liners with these new Goodyear tires on the next-gen car with the 18-inch wheels. The rear diffusers and the underbody of the cars are very, very delicate, very expensive. What is the solution here, if any, Brian?
I mean, I didn't even realize this, but when you were talking about it, I'm just thinking, what do they do at Martinsville? Because the tires are so low air pressure. I mean, they basically go off the pit road. Basically, it feels like flat tires. But even the drivers don't know, Davey. I mean, Joey Logano was telling after the race, he's like, he was telling Jeff Gluck, if anyone else has any suggestions, let me know, because I think the only suggestion I would have was have a pit crew on top of a truck and have that go out and change the tires and then come
to
the road.
And that's kind of facetious, but he's serious and it's not a bad idea, honestly.
I mean, Davey, what else could they do?
That's what I'm saying. Exactly. I mean, Goodyear has basically said that they probably can't put an inner liner in the car.
Yeah.
NASCAR's not going to be able to change the geometry of the race car to raise it up off the ground, because that would change the entire downforce and change the entire complexion of the race car. So if you can't put an inner liner in, you can't raise the car up. I think what you might have to do, at least for a short-term fix, instead of having the cars on the rollback and driving them back to pit road and you still lose 2, 3, 4, 5 laps depending on what track you're at, you may have to have a few chase vehicles with a makeshift pit crew. And they could just change the tires there, whether it's in the grass, on the banking, on the apron, whatever.
And that's the thing, because I don't know if Fox showed it, but during either a practice or a qualifying, Brad Keselowski spun, couldn't drive his car to pit road. He did not want the tow truck guys to get to take his car, because the tow truck people have accidentally been damaging the cars, and damaging parts that are worth like $25,000. These are not cheap equipment,
and they're not available either because of the supply chain.
Exactly. So, I mean, we've got a rotating effect of different problems with no real visible solution. So, honestly, I don't know, besides what Logano said after the race, anything else would be better than that.
Last thing when we touch on Auto Club Speedway is the track itself. The surface is elite. I think it is actually the oldest surface in the Cup Series now that Atlanta has been repaved. Mm-hmm. This track opened in 1997, I believe, Brian. That's when I was 1 year old. And it has not been repaved since. It is old. It is worn out. It is grainy. It is slick, slipping and sliding, multiple grooves, top to bottom. Auto Club Speedway is the peak racing surface in NASCAR right now. And the plans to convert it to a short track, I'd say right now, are on hold and on pause. Now, it's inevitable that the track's going to have to be repaved. It's a matter of when, not if. The question is, though, in the short term, for the next year or maybe even 2 years, what do you do to the track? Do you leave it as is? Do you go ahead with the short track reconfiguration? Where do you stand?
Everybody just take a step back and just breathe. Just breathe, as Aaron Rodgers says, relax. Because what we saw on Sunday, I don't think there's any way that NASCAR is going to go with the short track for now. So that being said, let's just hold off all of this for one year. If the racing is not good next year, then we'll look back into the short track. But with the racing that we saw 2, 3, 4 wide at some point. We saw battles for the lead. We saw spins. We saw the car just so difficult to drive, and it made the drivers actually have to wheel this thing instead of just driving around in circles. I don't think there's any way that they can switch this into a short track. I know we want to have more short tracks, but this track is not the way to go to a short track. I don't know if this will happen, but let's say Texas is not good. Switch that into a short track.
Yes.
Club is fine right now, Davey. So maybe even a Texas, something among the lines. But let's hold off on Auto Club for right now.
Because you saw what happened to Michigan. Michigan's surface was eerily similar to Auto Club. They had to repave it. I think that was in 2007. And ever since, it just has not been that great. Texas, I mean, my thoughts on this podcast are well known about Texas. I think everybody probably agrees with that. There's just a lot of moving parts and pieces when it comes to Fontana, because not only is the supply chain an issue for the next-gen car, it's an issue for construction. Parts are not readily available. There's not a lot of people that are willing and able to work on a construction project right now. California, there's different rules and regulations and legislatures to go through to try to get these things approved. And if the racing right now is good where it's at, don't fix it. It ain't broke. So I'm with you, Brian. Right now, at least for the next year, maybe two, leave it. If it gets to a point where the surface is beyond repair and it's coming up and you need to do a repave, then that's when you can think about, okay, this has been a great surface for, 25, almost 30 years. We got to think about doing something that's for the betterment of the track, the betterment of this series. That's when you may convert it into a short track. But hopefully we got a couple more years at least of this awesome, awesome racing surface out in Fontana. Brian, we got to pay some bills, but we'll come right back and we'll chat with Eric Jones. Stick around, my friend. The Front Stretch Podcast is brought to you in part by Sousa Media. Owned and operated by Kyle Sousa, Sousa Media services over 25 clients with social media management, website services, PR, marketing, branding, and more. Three-time modified champion Justin Bonsignor, Mr. Six-time champ and SRX winner Doug Kobe, Derek Griffith, up-and-coming driver, Patrick Emmerling, newly Xfinity Series owner, as well as Seekonk and Star Speedway are all Sousa Media clients, and that's not even including the plethora of guests on the Modified Tour in the New England area. You can learn more about Sousa Media by visiting them on Facebook or at KyleSousa.com. Check them out. Let's throw it over to my interview with Eric Jones of Petty GMS Motorsports. Again, a great, great run this past weekend at Fontana. Third place, led a handful of laps on pure speed, pure merit. He did not get up there on strategy. There was no luck involved whatsoever. The man qualified on the front row and stayed there and led laps and had a race-winning car, and he has not been able to say that at his tenure at Richard Petty Motorsports ever. So we chatted about that, how good it felt to be running up front with the big dogs, with a little bit of an underdog team, so to speak, but knowing that Eric can still get it done. And has his expectations for the season changed now that they had that great run in the second points-paying race of the season, working with the new crew chief and Dave Ellens? And I know he's a Michigan boy, so I teased him about Michigan versus Michigan State. And his former quarterback on the Lions, Matthew Stafford, was on site at Fontana. Did he get to meet him? That answer and more in our chat with Eric Jones. Pleasure to welcome on to the show this week, driver of that famed 43 car. He's got Focus Factor on his hat, and man, was he focused on Sunday at Auto Club. Eric Jones is in the house. How we doing, my friend?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you on. Let's start off there. Fontana, what a weekend it was. I mean, going back out to the West Coast, that was a storyline in and of itself. You qualified well, you finished well, you ran well. Going into the weekend, did you expect to have top five race-winning speed? What were the expectations going into the weekend?
Well, I mean, that's always the expectation, but you're just not sure how it's going to play out. And I think going into the weekend, you know, we were confident that we had a fast car. Our tests went really well, and we've gained on it really every time we've hit the racetrack. So the confidence was high. It was just a matter of kind of getting things right and making sure the car was doing everything we needed to do. But right off the bat, you know, I thought the Focus Factor Chevy was good from practice to qualifying. And then through most of the race, you know, the car was doing everything I needed to do. So I was really happy with that and proud of that. And glad we could come home with a good run out of it.
As the race kind of went on, when did you know that you had race winning speed? And when did you think to yourself, okay, I know last year didn't go how we wanted necessarily results wise, but this year we could start off with a bang and potentially put this thing in victory lane. When did that click for you?
Yeah, I mean, really pretty early. We took the lead there off the bat from the two car, and I felt like the car was really good. You know, Reddick came on pretty strong, and he was fast, and I knew he was going to be the guy we had to beat really all day, you know, looking at the rest of it from there, and really just racing with him most of the day, you know, trying to stay in contention on pit road and have good stops and stay up front was important. But, you know, I knew early we had a shot to win for sure. I just knew we had to get everything to go right. I mean, it's tough to win these races at all, you know, anytime, but especially when you got a lot of restarts like we had Sunday, it makes it even that much more tough.
You said during the race or right after that that's probably the best race that you've had with your tenure in the 43 car. Now that you've had a day or two to kind of massage with those thoughts and with the result, you stand by that? I think that it's pretty safe to say.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, you know, especially barring super speedways, our best race on a track outside of that. So just in contention all day, led laps, you know, and they weren't, you know, fluke laps, right? We were fast enough just to go up and lead the race and be out front. And that felt good. You know, it's nice to have that kind of speed. And especially, you know, with the way last year was and the work we've put in now in the off season to try to get the car better and improve our program, you know, it's just nice to see it kind of pay off.
As a driver who knows what it's like to be in the top stuff and the best equipment, to then go down and have your expectations change because the organization that you're with, they have different expectations, right? How good did it feel on a personal level to be running up front again with guys that you know have the best stuff? And Petty GMS has obviously taken steps to make strides in the right direction in the offseason. It's clearly paying dividends. But you personally, Eric, given all that you've been through in your career in the sport, how good did that feel to just be up there battling for a win on pure speed?
It was good. I mean, it's been a while. You know, obviously last year we never we had that at a super speedway a couple of times. So we never had that kind of speed at anywhere else. And so, you know, I knew going into last year it was going to be somewhat of a building year and a work in progress to get the car and the team better over time. And obviously that was the goal last year, was just to try to bring in good people and do good things. And obviously the merger with GMS this offseason has helped us as well. But Dave coming on board, new crew chief, obviously has helped a lot and really brought in kind of a new mindset, a new outlook on the car. And obviously the next gen car has helped as well. So all those things kind of came together at once and has made a pretty big difference for us.
What's that new mindset? What's the different mojo that's going on inside those walls?
Well, I think Dave just brings, you know, obviously a different perspective. He's worked for a lot of different groups and a lot of different drivers for a lot of years, but never been at the cup level as crew chief. So he's got a lot of energy himself that he wants to come in and run well and prove himself as a crew chief. And obviously he wants to win races and be competitive. And Dave's very engineering driven, which is something that I like as a driver. It's what I've kind of worked with most of my career in NASCAR. And he brings that to the table. So I've been really happy just with the communication with him. I thought Fontana went really smooth. Obviously, when you have a good car, it makes the communication easier and the day simpler, but everything really smooth.
Before the season started and before, you know, you guys got announced as a pairing, did you have a relationship with him at all? Or is this the first that you guys had interacted and worked together?
No, I really didn't know Dave. I knew of him, obviously. Over there at Junior Motorsports, he was there when I was Xfinity racing, and so I crossed paths with him, but never really sat down and talked to him until really, you know, later last year when we started kind of making the move that we were going to change crew chiefs and looking for someone. Dave was, you know, our number one guy and guy we were really pushing hard for, and that's when I started talking to him and really didn't start honestly building a relationship until we went to the Charlotte oval test with the next gen car. So but the relationship is built, you know, quickly. I get along really well with Dave, and him and I are on the same page really about a lot of things, so it's went really smooth.
Have you had to adjust your vernacular? Are you still calling it Richard Petty Motorsports or GMS Racing, or are you all dead set on Petty GMS Motorsports? Because I'm still calling it one or the other.
Yeah, no, it's been a change for sure. I've gotten pretty good about it now, but I know the first time somebody put an event in my calendar and it was labeled as PGMS, I was like, what? PGMS? What is that? That was right after the merger. I'm like, oh yeah, Petty GMS. So it took me a second, you know, it was a few weeks there to get used to it, but everything's going pretty smooth.
I'm sure you probably got a little bit of leeway, though. Like, if you have a slip of the tongue every now and then, because Lord knows I do, it's still new for most people in the industry and even within the team. So I'm sure you have a little bit of leeway, which is nice.
Yeah, we get a little break on that.
Yeah, that's good. Also, former Detroit Lions great, now Super Bowl champion Matt Stafford was at the race. I know you're a big Lions fan. Did you get a chance to say hi, or was he too busy?
He was up at the intro stage, so I said hi to him. Real quick, we didn't stand and talk, but it was cool to meet him. Cool to see him. I've seen him out, you know, in Michigan before when he was playing for the Lions there. But it was cool to see him come out and support that race. Obviously, coming off of a pretty big win for him, so it was cool.
I assume you were rooting for the Rams so that Stafford got a ring, or were you too bitter?
No, I was cheering for him. I mean, the Super Bowl this year, I wasn't really rooting one way or the other too hard. Obviously, it was cool to see him, you know, win that game. I mean, he deserves it. He's a great quarterback, obviously. So that was cool. I you know, if I had to pick one, I was rooting for the Rams.
There were some other celebrities there. Ice Cube was there. He was at the Clash, obviously. Tons of actors and actresses. Albert Pujols, the Machine, was there. Did you get to meet anybody else rich and famous out there in LA?
I didn't. I saw him, you know, but it was cool. I mean, just to see the energy around the sport the last month, really. Definitely. I look at it and say from the Clash to the 500 to Fontana last weekend, you know, it's been huge crowds. It's been a lot of energy just around the race. That's exciting as a driver, you know, and as someone in the sport. So hopefully we keep that momentum going, and I think we will. You know, as long as we keep putting on these good shows like we did last weekend, these fans are going to keep showing up and supporting.
I don't know if anybody has the answer to this. I don't. Maybe you do, since you're obviously a driver and you're one of the people that is contributing to that new energy. But what's the reason for it? Is it the next-gen car? Is it the Clash being in a new place? Is it just a freshness overall and these new ideas, new energy, new car, new package, everything's new? Why do you think that there's this renewed optimism and positivity around the sport right now?
Yeah, I think just the shakeup of it all. You know, there was a lot of years we were pretty – stagnant and what we were doing, obviously the same car, the same tracks year after year, the schedule not really changing much. And then the last year and a half, you know, we've came and made these big schedule changes. We've had the next gen car come out, which has been pretty intriguing, I think, to a lot of fans. And then obviously the racing has been great with it too so far. Mm-hmm. But I think really the schedule shifting around, bringing these new venues on, going to new places, going to places like Coliseum, has just really gotten people interested and curious about NASCAR. You know, a lot of people at the Clash had never been to a NASCAR race, and that's great. And hopefully those people stick with it and support the sport more. But I think it's just the shifting around in new venues has been a huge thing for us.
And obviously for you, I mean, we've mentioned the merger with Petty GMS. How different is the team from last year to this year in terms of personnel, shop space, inventory, all those different things? I feel like it's got to be night and day.
Yeah, it's a big shift. You know, obviously there's all new people kind of running the show and in charge. We've moved shops. We're at the GMS shop now in Statesville. We were on the RCR campus before. A few of my guys, most of my guys stayed along. I think we had three, four, five guys, I guess, come with us from our RPM to Petty GMS. Okay. We had to hire a few new guys and obviously some new shop people coming in and starting a cup team and a second cup team. So it's been a work in progress for sure. And it was a busy off season kind of getting all that done, but we're in a good spot now with people and where we're at. So I've been pretty happy with all that.
And again, I can't harp on it enough, but the Fontana result for a lot of people, it was a bit jarring because they're not used to seeing guys like you, Tyler Reddick, Chase Briscoe being up there leading laps on pure raw speed, outrunning JGR and Penske and Hendrick. Do you think it's too early to say that the next gen car fits your driving style really, really well? Do you think we may need a couple more races under our belts to say that with certainty? Or do you think that this is a car that does suit your driving style and Fontana is only scratching the surface of what's to come?
Well, I've enjoyed it so far. I don't know if I can say totally for sure yet, but the Coliseum, the Clash went really well. We were fast mm-hmm. there. I felt like I was comfortable in the car. Obviously, Fontana, I was super comfortable. There was a lot of guys, you know, struggling with feel and kind of where the car was and getting comfortable with it. I never really felt like that through the weekend. So, you know, I hope it continues like that. And obviously bringing good cars is going to be a big key in that too. But I enjoy the car so far. I think the racing has been good, and I hope it's going to stay the way it is. You know, challenging to drive and putting on a good show makes it fun for us and fun for everybody watching too.
I know you're more so a week-to-week guy and you don't really set expectations far out in advance, but as a team, did you guys have expectations going into 2022? And if so, have those expectations changed at all given the run that you guys had in California?
I think our expectations were high this year. You know, looking at the next-gen car and looking at our merger with GMS, you know, I think we were pretty confident we could have a strong year, and I think Dave felt the same way. So, mm-hmm. You know, I do expectations change a bit after Fontana? Probably a little bit. You know, I don't think we expected to come out so strong this year right off the bat. I mean, we put in all the work and the effort to do it, but it's still another thing to go and actually execute it. So, you know, yeah, the expectations change for sure. You know, going to Vegas this weekend, we obviously now expect to run up front and do the same thing. So that's great, though, as a team. You know, you don't want to go to the track thinking, you know, hey, a top 10 is going to be a great weekend for us. And that's one thing. But when you can go to the racetrack and know that you're going to contend for a win, and obviously the goal is to win, it really makes it a whole different ballgame.
But last year, a top 10 was a successful weekend for you guys. And now you're going saying that you know you can win the race. As a driver, how liberating and how freeing is that to know, okay, before I may have had to adjust my own expectations internally and maybe not try to get the most out of the car because I don't want to push it over its limits, whereas to now, you know that you can push it to its limits, you know where it is, and you know that that limit not necessarily is 15th or 10th, it could be 5th or 1st.
Well, it's a different mentality as a driver, really. You know, you're focused everywhere you run, and it's challenging in every spot in the pack. But going up front and racing for wins in the Cup Series is just a totally different mentality. And honestly, there were some things, you know, looking back through the race and through the weekend that I was just rusty on. I just haven't been in contention in, you know, over a year for wins at this level. And I had to clean some things up just on restarts and pit road and other things that, you know, require excellence and perfection to win these races. So, that's the interesting thing for me, you know, that mentality shift. So obviously if we keep running like this, you know, I'll just keep getting better and better at those small things and contending for wins. So it's been a mentality shift for sure as a driver.
You mentioned Las Vegas. We're obviously heading there this weekend, the middle stop of the West Coast swing. How do you handle that as a driver in terms of making sure you get enough rest and enough sleep, but also knowing that this is a really important stretch that can set off the trajectory for the rest of the year?
Well, it's a tough 3 weeks, you know, and I think for us coming off of Daytona, obviously we got caught up in a wreck there and didn't get the finish we wanted. So we were in a bit of a points deficit, and then having a huge weekend at Fontana points wise and getting way back up in the points is great. But right now it's so easy to gain and fall, right? You know, we went from, I don't know, I think we were 22nd, third in points all the way to sixth or seventh now. Mm-hmm. But 10, 15 points get you right back in 15th or 16th again. So
right.
You got to be really careful, and you got to really execute these three races and these 3 weeks of the West Coast. It's a challenge for everybody, for the teams, for the drivers, the travel and turning these cars around. It's a lot of work, but it's a really important 3 weeks in this season for setting yourself up.
Last thing on the team overall, I haven't asked about Ty yet, but having a teammate again. I know I asked you about that in Daytona during media day. That's got to be nice to bounce information off of and also have that extra set of eyes and ears to have on the ground, on the track, and also just in the shop to lean on.
It has been nice. You know, I think having a teammate at the cup level is really important, and it's a benefit in every way. But having somebody just to know, I guess if you're doing something wrong, it's easier to figure it out a little bit quicker. If you're doing something right, you know, you can share those things and obviously make each other better, and it goes both ways. So I'm excited for the year, you know, with Ty and building this program, getting better. You know, they struggled a little bit in Fontana, but they were on a different setup than we were. So, you know, Vegas this week, and I think they're going to be a little more similar to us. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And I'm excited to, you know, get him running well and get him up front and be able to continue to make our cars better.
As I end every one of our interviews, Eric, I have to ask, I assume you still have not changed your collegiate allegiance, even though I called you out at Daytona with my Michigan State polo. No change?
No change. I'm still rooting for Michigan. We got Harbaugh back, I guess.
So we can beat your ass every year. Thank you for bringing him back.
That's right. That's right. It's been a few years, so hopefully this is the year that that big brother can come back.
Well, your basketball coach is punching other people, so you got that going for you.
Yeah, you know, Juwan, he's a good dude. I met him a few years back, and I really like him a lot. I mean, he's a little fired up there, so
a little bit.
Yeah, he's a little fired up. That was pretty interesting.
I actually met him in the Phoenix airport leaving the championship race last year. I was decked out in Spartan stuff, and we're in the TSA pre-check line. I asked him for a selfie, and he gave me the cold shoulder, which, to be fair, how would it look if Tom Izzo or Mel Tucker took a picture with a Michigan fan? Like, wouldn't have looked good. So he stiffed me, but I actually gave him a pass for that one. But you can't be punching people. You can't be doing that.
Yeah. That might have been a little much.
A little bit, yeah. Well, we'll see if we cross paths in the tournament, but I'm sure we'll cross paths at the racetrack again soon. And best of luck out in Las Vegas. Don't lose too much money and continue getting some sleep because you're back at it, back out west at Phoenix again the following weekend. But thank you so much for your time, Eric. Appreciate it. Say hi to Oscar for me.
I will. Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Checkered Flag is out on the podcast. Thank you so much to Eric and Samantha Jones of Petty GMS Motorsports for helping coordinate that conversation. Great people to work with. Eric's a great guy to interview, so appreciate his time. Appreciate Samantha for helping us out, and we look forward to seeing him on track this weekend in Vegas and chatting with him soon, even though he's a Michigan fan. We'll let that slide, Brian. Las Vegas Motor Speedway this weekend, my friend. You think we're going to see the bigger dogs come out to play and run up front? You think we're going to see a lot more parity like we saw at Auto Club? Which side of the spectrum are you leaning towards?
These give me a little bit like last week. I think we're going to see a little bit of some surprises come at the very front and battle for the lead during 1, 2, and even maybe during stage 3. But I think when it's all said and done, we're going to have a usual favorite, whether it's a Penske and HMS, get the job done. But I do think we're going to see some parity.
You think Tyler Reddick's in for another big weekend?
I think so. I don't think he's going to be as dominant as he was, but I do think he's going to be battling top 5, maybe top 3. He loves to run the high side. And I don't know. Mm-hmm. Can you really run the high side in Vegas? It's not like a homestead.
Well, we don't know because this car may lend itself to running the high side. You don't know.
Exactly. There's so many. I mean, we're just itching the surface, really. We're just getting that little bit of that. It's like a little piece of cake. We just got a little bit of it.
Just a little nibble.
Exactly. See, that's why I love Davey. He has the words when I can't say it.
It's almost like we finish each other's
sentences.
Sandwiches.
Damn it!
You were so close. You were doing so well.
I'll work on it, okay? I'll work on it. Anyway, I think we've got a little sneak peek, so I don't know yet. But with that being said, look out for the 8. Not just this upcoming week, but the entire season. I've heard from multiple people, even among the garage area, this could be a breakout season for Reddick.
What about the Vegas boys? We got Kyle and Kurt Busch that are heading back to their home track once again. I believe they both have had success at Vegas. I think they've each won a race, Kyle more recently than Kurt has. I think it's a bit early to say that Kurt's going to be a contender for the victory, but then again, I didn't expect Eric Jones to be one last weekend. You think we could see a hometown Busch brother in victory lane?
If we do, it's definitely going to be the 18. But the thing is, with what we saw from the 45, it was so weird. He was like the 4 car with just not being in contention at all. And then all of a sudden, you see him running top 20. Then he's in the top 15. He ended up with a top 15, which is incredible because he had to do a pass-through penalty, almost got lapped. He was just struggling to keep before the competition caution. Yeah. He was just working it. I even think he had a speeding penalty or something among the lines. Yeah, exactly. So he had a difficult day, and he still got a top 15. So I think not just for 23-11, but just for Bub Wallace in itself, the addition of Kurt Busch is really helping. And we already saw 2 races in. He's doing some work. He's getting his business done and making a statement on the track already.
He sure is. You want to make the people some money and have some bets, some friendly wagering, Brian?
I love it. You know, I'm always a fan of the betting.
You know how this works, party people. Odds courtesy of Caesars Sportsbook in association with William Hill. If you choose to gamble, please do so responsibly. These are head-to-head driver matchups, straight up. Who will finish higher? Brian, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Chase Briscoe versus Ty Dillon. I think this is a slam dunk for me.
Easy. Chase Briscoe surprised me at Auto Club. He's going to surprise me again in Fontana. Not in Fontana. He surprised me in Fontana. He's going to surprise me in Vegas. Briscoe.
Yeah. Heavy favorite, Chase Briscoe. I'll go with him as well. Greg Biffle versus Daniel Hemric? Oh, my God. Hemric. Hammer that. Are you kidding?
I mean, why would you pick Biffle unless Hemric wrecks? And Hemric, easily.
Yeah, that's. I mean, the only way that Biffle wins that matchup is if Hemric wrecks early, because New York Racing, they are not of the caliber of Colleg Racing. So I'm gonna throw some units on that one. This is a good one. Tyler Reddick versus Kurt Busch. Reddick is the favorite, and I'm gonna roll with him.
I still gotta go Reddick. I'm a big fan of Reddick. I think he's gonna make some noise. I got the 8 car.
How about the 3rd and 4th place finishers this past weekend? Eric Jones and Daniel Suarez. Eric Jones the favorite.
I was going to go Suarez, but I think you switched me. I'm going to go Eric Jones, but if Suarez beats him, I'm blaming you.
I'll go Suarez then, because there's more value as an underdog there. How about Christopher Bell, who, by the way, is tied for last with Ross Chastain out of Chartered Cars in the point standings versus Austin Dillon. C. Bell really needs a good day.
I think he's going to play it safe, going to play it decent, get a top 15, maybe even a top 10. I got the 20 car.
Okay. I'm going to go Austin Dillon because I think RCR's got the edge right now. JGA's got some kinks to work out. How about Kyle Larson versus Chase Elliott? Could be a race for the win.
I'm going to go with the 5 car. I'm never going to bet against Kyle Larson.
Yeah, defending winner of this race. I think that's a pretty safe bet. Eric Almirola versus Ross Chastain. I'll go with the 10.
I'm very impressed with Eric Almirola. 2 top 10 started
all year. Sneaky.
Very, very. He's just been off the radar a little bit, like what I'm seeing from him in the number 10. I'll go with the 10 car.
How about Austin Cindric versus the former driver of the 2, Brad Keselowski? Brad K, a slight favorite there.
I'm still not convinced on the 6 car to have the speed that they had during the duels, just because of super speedway and everything. Cindric showed that he had the speed, and it just wasn't Daytona fluke by getting the pole last week at Fontana. Yeah. So I'll go with the 3 car.
Yeah, I'll go with Cindric as well. I was pretty impressed by him at Fontana. Not that he just won the pole, but he ran well during the race, too. All right, few more. Rapid fire. Martin Truex Jr. versus Kevin Harvick.
I'll go with the 19.
I'll go with Truex, too. Harvick, just something's not speaking to me this week. Michael McDowell versus Justin Haley. This is where you can make your money at the back half of the field.
I'll go with the 34.
I'll go with the 31, Justin Haley. How about Ryan Blaney versus Joey Logano?
Joseph Logano, 22. He could be my pick to win. Check out Stock Car Scoop, though, tomorrow.
Ooh, that's a tease, my friend. This is the Pennzoil 400. And this is the Pennzoil car, so we'll see how he's able to fare there. Cole Custer and Ricky Stenhouse Jr., I'm going to roll with the 47 with that momentum.
I'm going to go Stenhouse.
Denny Hamlin versus Kyle Busch.
I said the 18. I do think the 11 will get a sneaky top five, so I'll go with Hamlin.
I'll go Kyle Busch to be different. How about Bubba Wallace versus Chris Buescher?
Bubba's struggling through the first two. I know he finished in, but he was just off the entire weekend at Fontana, so I'll go.
Yeah, Bubba was loose coming off of two, caused that wreck with Keselowski, the 21 and the 2, so I'm going to go with Buescher as well. He's shown a little bit more speed. And last but not least, Willie B versus Alex Bowman this week. I'm going to hammer Willie B on that one. That was not Brian thinking, by the way. He was yawning. Just for
everybody. It was a yawn, but I was also thinking.
Yeah, but Bowman, you played it off well, but I spoil your secrets.
I had to say, you had to...
Like keeping you awake over there?
A little bit. Anyway, I'm going to go Byron just because he was contending for the lead until the incident with the 8 car, so I'm going to go with the 24.
Your pick to win? I think you already teased it, but give it to us.
Joseph Logano gets it done.
Frick.
Ah, frick.
I'm going to go – I went with Kyle Busch last weekend. I think I'm going to stick with him this weekend as well. A little hometown cooking, a little mojo. Okay. I think that M&M's Ethel's Chocolates car is going to be in victory lane this weekend out in Sin City. Brian, you will not be at Las Vegas. Neither will I, unfortunately. Our streak comes to an end. But we will still be providing you great coverage all weekend long on frontstretch.com. And we'll be back with Stock Car Scoop and the Front Stretch podcast later this week and early next week. So keep it locked here. And they can follow you on Twitter as well for wonderful coverage. Give us your social handles, my friend.
At the Brian Nolan. Also follow us on Twitter at Front Stretch, and then follow Apple Podcasts, Google Play for Stock Car Scoop every Friday and Sunday evening. I give Adam Cheek a lot of crap, but thing is, he does a killer job being my co-host. So Adam Cheek and myself, Stock Car Scoop every Friday and Sunday.
You're damn right. Adam Cheek's not too big time for us now that he has his own little radio show. He still comes on with us. So fair. Wonderful there. Thank you guys for listening to the Front Stretch podcast this week. As Brian said, Stock Car Scoop is on the same feed. So if you like what you heard here today, or if you like what you hear on Stock Car Scoop, please consider leaving us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. You can subscribe there, Spotify, Google, anywhere you get your podcasts. We should be available there for your consumption. And if we're not, drop us a line and we'll try to rectify that issue for you. Thank you once again to Eric Jones for coming on the show this week and for Samantha Jones for helping coordinate the chat. Thank you for listening once again. Enjoy the racing action this weekend out in Sin City. Let's see who's going to roll the dice. Maybe hit on red or black. Are they going to get lucky in Las Vegas? Time will tell. We'll see you next week.